terminal life. You have done that, leave. Because remember, you are there today because someone has left. Imagine if that person has denied to leave, you wouldn't be there. So you have also to abide by the constitution because you have agreed to respect the constitution of the republic. And the constitution is the biggest and the most important institution that we have. So a serving president, to allow rumors to grow that he is tempting for third term and moving the way he has been moving. Let's take the example of not allowing people to a peaceful demonstration.
Well, for that, some people are saying that the police are there to enforce the law and to maintain law and order. Now, some people, they argue, want to create chaos, disaffection, undermine social cohesion, and create chaos in the society. So the police had to make sure that those who they deem as troublemakers are not allowed necessarily to create chaos and to protect the territorial integrity of Mozambique.
Quite the opposite. Quite the opposite. It has been 10 years that peaceful demonstration was denied. But after 10 years, the mayor of Maputo municipality, he gave a permission for young people to peacefully demonstrate in salutation to a rapper musician who died, who is someone who is much appreciated by the people. So it was a demonstration to celebrate life and legacy of an important musician.
Are you pleased with the current human rights situation in Mozambique? And if you are not, what is the next step forward in order to ensure or to encourage others to create the enabling space for human rights conditions to improve?
Mozambique is moving in a trajectory of the blocking the civic space. They have a draft law close the civic space. And this comes after prominent human rights defenders, they have been beaten up, they have been abducted, and unfortunately, one of the prominent human rights defenders has paid with his life. So threat, harassment, use of legislative processes and judiciary to persecute human rights defenders is quite common in Mozambique today.
Adriano Nuvunga is the director of the Center for Democracy and Development, or CDD, in Mozambique. He spoke with me from here in Washington. Civil society and the Consumers Association of Malawi have rejected plans by the government to increase water tariffs by 52%. The groups are questioning the timing of the hike, saying it is insensitive in today's challenging economic conditions. They also expressed concern that the increase will have a bad effect on other essential goods and services. This after the government approved a proposal by 5 water boards to increase tariffs. The move was put on hold last year after sharp opposition from civil society and the Consumers Association of Malawi. In requesting the increase, the utility institutions contend that operational and production costs have significantly increased. The failure to increase tariffs, officials argue, could lead to the collapse of the utility companies. But critics say the increase will worsen cholera. For more about the opposition to the water tariff hike, I reach Sylvester Namiwa. He is the executive director of the Center for Democracy Economic Development Initiatives.
It is simply inconceivable that a government that has got the welfare of Malawians, especially vulnerable at heart, would at this material time accept any board to increase the cost of water. Because we are just coming from the devastating Cyclone Freddy that almost washed away all the alternative water sources. Now, if government intends to increase the tariff of water, it means we are condemning millions of Malawians to be using unprotected water sources because they cannot manage. They cannot manage because already there is a skyrocketing cost of living. The president should have used the 1 billion kwacha sent for grasses at his state residences meant for the loans, or 2 billion that has been set aside for his endless globetrotting to subsidize the cost of water.
Prices of goods have gone up all over the world, and the chemicals used to process water has also gone up. Don't you think that Malawians should pay realistic tariff based on how expensive things have gotten?
If you factor in how wasteful this government is, it doesn't make sense, because it's a total hypocrisy that the Malawians, they should tighten their belts. When those people they elected, they put into office, they should loosen their own belts. There is a lot of wasteful in this government. Therefore, it does not make sense that the taxpayer should pay the price. It should start.
But Namiwa, in spite of the difficulties that Malawians face, the government has to run. International obligations would have to be met. You can't just be in a coup in Malawi and not go anywhere just because there are challenges, you know.
Just across here, our neighbor, Tanzania, we had late President Dr. Magufuli, who literally transformed the face of Tanzania without leaving Africa. This is the whole reason why we have got embassies and high commissioners outside. They are there to represent the president in an event that he does not want to travel or has been constrained to travel. Some of these events the president goes over to attend, they are very petty. They have nothing to do with the current situation we are facing. In fact,
are you saying the president's trip to the United Kingdom to witness the swearing in of King Charles is bad for Malawi? Is that what you are saying?
Highly insensitive, because as the president is leaving the country, the economy is on its knees. There is literally no fuel in Malawi. Any leader that cares about the plight of the people, it is not the right time to leave the country. Suffice to say that we have got the whole High Commissioner in London who could have amply represented the president there. Why we should be finding or banging heads, should be looking for solutions to end the national crisis. Now, look here. We are coming from a situation where we don't have forex. This is why we have got the long queues of fuel. At the same time, we have got intermittent power supply. How do you expect anything to work in the kind of scenario? And surprisingly enough, the president is happy, hoping from one thing to another, doing this as nothing, spending the very same scarce forex that should have been used or spared to buy or to pay for the fuel.
Namiwa, some people are saying you will accuse the government and criticize the government no matter the decision the government takes. And so people should not even take you serious. How do you respond to say that?
That's the beauty of democracy. People are entitled to their own opinions, but Malawians are their own witnesses. Malawians are their own witnesses. We have got, for the first time, a leader that doesn't care about the plight of Malawians. So if those people, they have got positive stories about this country, let them tell their stories, because we represent the people. Because there's no way I can be applauding, I can be clapping hands for a leader when actually Malawians are crying. We speak for the vulnerable. We speak for the ordinary Malawian, the voter. These people are happy because they are benefiting from this system. You see, those people that benefit from a forte system, they don't see that system to be forte because they are benefiting. Those people accusing me of being harsh or being critical of the president, they are the beneficiaries of the plight of Malawians.
Sylvester Namiwa is the Executive Director of the Center for Democracy Economic Development Initiatives. He spoke with me from the Malawian capital, Lilongwe. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, He is a freshly graduated medical student from the University of Cape Coast in Ghana's Central Region, who took away 16 out of the 22 awards at the school's 55th congregation. Among the awards Dr. Nathaniel Ni Antie Kuju won include the top prize in medical biochemistry, physiology, microbiology, community medicine, chemical pathology, and pharmacology. He was also judged to be the best clinical student, best graduating pre-clinical student, overall performance, best student in family medicine and molecular medicine with certificate awards. Dr. Kuju was recently honored by the Gamanche, the King and Overlord of Accra, for his academic exploits at a ceremony in the Ghanaian capital, Accra. To learn more about his academic exploits, his motivation and prospects as a newly minted physician, I reached Dr. Nathaniel Ni Antie Kuju.
Yeah, so concerning the awards, I must say it was a surreal experience to actually get 16 awards on the day of the graduation. I was very excited, quite overwhelmed with emotions. My family, everyone was so happy. My mom, my dad. I think with the videos that were circulating, you can see my mom moving all around, so excited. My dad was at the back, waving his hands all over. My brother was moving up and down with the bouquet of flowers. So it was a really exciting feeling. Everyone was so happy. And personally, I was so happy to be able to make them happy on that occasion.
Did you anticipate the kind of attention and popularity that your academic exploits brought to you?
No, honestly, no. To be honest, I wasn't expecting it to be that way. Because I think the last year, another one of our students had 15 awards. So I've got 16 awards, and the publicity that it has got wasn't something that I was expecting. Honestly, I must be honest, I didn't think it would go this far. I'm just grateful to God for how things have turned out.
So tell me, Ni, what was your motivation?
Yes, I personally believe that in every environment you are in, you need to strive to give off your best, give up the best of yourself. So you shouldn't settle for anything more other than the best. So as you are going through the years, I always make sure that I give off my best, and to make sure that you have the lot of academic discipline, because with the medicine program, like a lot of academic discipline is needed because of the volume of stuff that you need to know within a short period of time. And there's a lot of attention on you, both from your colleagues, both from your lecturers as well. So that one becomes an extra motivation because, you know, all eyes are sort of on you and you don't want to disappoint anyone. Yeah.
Now you have graduated. Where are you working now, and what is the next steps forward, if I may ask you?
Yeah, so I'm currently working in Accra, State Children Hospital, GPS. The next step for me is I'm currently doing my house job there, which will be for a year, then I'll move on to another place to do another year. So that will complete 2 years of internship. As soon as I'm done, I'm planning to move into a specialty, preferably neurology, because I have the dream of setting up a stroke unit in my country, Ghana, which is designed and dedicated towards management of stroke patients, especially to help avoid some of the complications that they suffer from, which sometimes contributes to the mortality of people with stroke. Yeah.
Have you spoken to any mentors or anybody who can help you?
Yeah, so I've spoken to a number of specialists, not necessarily from the field of neurology. I'm yet to contact a person from the field of neurology, but you don't have enough of them in the country at the moment. But I've spoken to other senior colleagues, specialists, and consultants about this, and they've advised me appropriately on what steps to take as to get there.
So for those who will be listening to you around the world, in Ghana, Africa, and the rest of the world, what would be your message to them?
Yes, so I would like to say that when you have a dream, you should always focus on the dream. You should not be too comfortable in the course of achieving the dream. So let me just give the example. I think you want to move from a point A to C.
You don't say that because you are B and you are so comfortable, you are doing so well at B. You shouldn't lose focus of the fact that your end goal was to get to the point C. So you should always make sure that you have the dream in mind, your focus is on the dream, and you should strive to make sure that you achieve the dream that you set out at the start of your journey.
Dr. Nathaniel Ni Ante Kujo is a freshly graduated medical student from the University of Cape Coast. He spoke with me from the Ghanaian capital, Accra.
Has social media improved your life, or is it more of a distraction? We'd love to hear from you. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code plus 1, then 202-258-3076. The number again, plus 1-202-258-3076. Can't wait to hear from you.
Gibson Kawago is the founder of Waga, a Tanzanian tech startup focused on addressing energy shortages in the East African nation. He is now on a tour of the U.S., where he is engaging with entrepreneurs, leaders, and members of the diaspora on how he can grow his business across Africa. Kawago is among the entrepreneurs that met and showcased his product to Vice President Kamala Harris during her recent visit to the continent, where she hailed young people for their innovation. My colleague Mike Hove sat down with Kawago to learn more about his U.S. trip and how his company Waga is addressing energy shortages in Africa.
I came here to the United States. I'm one among the 17 young leaders for Sustainable Development Goals, where I help Tanzanian youth to make sure they understand about the SDGs and to help them on how they can identify different problems in the society and use them as opportunities to come up with solutions to tackle them and so that we can create jobs. I was recognized by the UN last year, and I'll be working with them for a period of 2 years. And this time, we came for a retreat. Mm-hmm. And we also came for the ECOSOC Forum, Economic and Social Council. So after the meeting, then I organized together with Engineer Walter Minja and Peter Ligate the meet and greet. You know, the main target of this meet and greet is to meet different specialists in the battery sector.
Talk to us about how you are addressing Tanzania's energy shortages.
Yes, so most of the times we always look to solve problems, but sometimes the solutions that we use create other problems. For example, fighting lighting, people who use kerosene lamp, they solve the lighting problem and create another problem, releasing carbon dioxide. So at Waga, we looked at it in a different way. Like, we decided to look at how different people in Tanzania are poorly disposing electric waste and electronic waste. Then we looked at how we can transform the waste into energy. We have youth and women battery collectors who collect the laptop batteries, which are trash in different places, and we buy from them so that we can incentivize them and make sure that we create decent jobs. Then we process those batteries. Then we create lithium-ion power packs. Now, these power packs have different functions. A power pack can power an electric scooter. Then coming to the lighting and powering solution, in most of the places in Tanzania, still they don't have access to the grid. What we have done, we have created portable power packs that people in rural places, they can install in the house. They can put solar panels on the top of the roof. Then they can do a wiring and the power pack can be recharged. Then what they can do, they can watch televisions, they can charge mobile phones, they can power everything in-house from the power pack.
What other countries are you looking to expand operations to?
We were looking towards expanding our works to Congo, to Sudan, to Somalia, to Kenya in some of the places, and to Malawi, because we found there are so many communities that still need clean energy, and there's still a room for that. So as far as we have started working in Tanzania, we're now looking at how we can expand to different African countries so that we can make Africa great again.
Gibson Kawago is the founder of Waga, a Tanzanian tech startup. He spoke with my colleague Mike Hovey from here in Washington. A new report by Freedom House indicates that Tunisia experienced over the past year the third largest decline in press freedom of any country as a result of the actions of the elected president. Kais Saied has continued to consolidate power by formally dissolving the parliament and creating a new constitution and dismantled legislative and judicial checks on the executive branch. For viewer Noura Hafaid depicted a gloomy picture on the ground.
The decline in press freedom in Tunisia came as a result of decision of Tunisian President Kais Saied 2 years ago to consolidate his power with the reforms of the three branches of government. It was followed by issuing a decree last September which criminalized electronic publishing and rolling back media freedoms gained after 2011. The campaign of arrests in Tunisia has expanded in a recent month to include, in addition to political figure, the director of the private Mosaic Radio, Nordine Boutar. His interrogation by security agents over the radio's editorial has sparked condemnation by Tunisian journalists. Mehdi Al-Jalassi is a member of the Tunisian Journalist Syndicate. He highlighted the threats that have become an obstacle to the practitioners of the profession.
Since July 25, 2021, the issue of monopolizing power by President Kais Saied and gathering all powers in his hands contributed to tightening the margins of freedom and opinion trials of journalists, activists, and politicians. All of this is what Tunisia is going through due to the political change and due to exceptional measures. The decrees issued by the president are all repressive and aim to crack down on freedom of opinion and expression.
In response, the Higher Independent Authority for Audiovisual Communication, HICA, requested that competent authorities ensure the editorial independence of media institutions and reject any interference in their choices outside the frameworks regulated by law. Hisham Al-Sanusi is a member of the HICA.
Since 2014, there was supposed to be a final law for the HICA to prevent state interference in the press. However, due to the change took place on July 25 through Kais Saied, this law has not been implemented. And as a member of the Council of Higher Independent Authority for Audiovisual Commission, we have issued many statements denouncing the manipulation of the state institutions, especially those that perpetuate the democratic transition.
Presidential Decree 54 imposes prison sentences of up to 6 years and a fine up to $20,000 for violating its provision for fighting IT and telecom crimes. Article 3 states that the Penal Code and the Code of Criminal Procedures continue to apply to stated crimes in the new law and may allow for even harsher punishments. Tunisian journalist Fares Jami, a newly graduated journalist and an active member of the Syndicate of Journalists, explains the effect of the decree on press freedom.
Journalists become fearful of being sanctioned under the basis of this decree, and this is considered as a break on the freedom of the press and expression. The arrest of Nordine Boutar and other journalists under Decree 54 is considered as a serious threat for all journalists and also for the freedom of expression in Tunisia.
Freedom of the press is not only threatened by state authorities, but according to Amir bin Mohammed Abdul Wahab, it is also threatened by disinformation that is posted on some social media platforms.
Today, we're living in the reality of digital space, so the problem has become a threat to the value and quality of journalistic work. Social media become a threat to professional ethics and guidance to public opinion, and the emergence of professionality that have nothing to do with the professional of journalists and media, which have become competing with the biggest media professional and threatening the value of journalistic work.
Freedom of opinion, expression, press and media was one of the most important gains of the 2011 Jasmine Revolution. However, the progress is on the brink of collapse and journalists are sounding the alarm as they are subjected to arrests, harassment and violations of their freedoms. For Voice of America, I'm Noura Faib from Tunisia.
Right now it's time for music from our African collection.
From Pretoria in South Africa, and you are listening to Nightline Africa from the Voice of America with Peter Clothy. Stay tuned and don't change the dial.
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Mike Hove, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, the tortoise said that it always travels with its musical instrument in case it meets other musicians. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa. Thank you.